Thank you for tuning in to the Golden State Media Concepts Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your host, Tate. And today I have a special guest with me, a good friend of mine. Introduce yourself there, William.
This is William.
And William, he's one of the executives around here at Golden State. And he's a big MMA fan. So we're actually going to bring him on today. We're going to talk about some of the things that are going on and the world of mixed martial arts. We're going to cover, we're going to kind of recap Bellator 155 and everything that's kind of going on there. Kind of a controversial decision. We're going to touch a little bit on UFC Fight Night, which is coming up this weekend, along with some talk, touch on some of the other fights. Then we're also going to touch on a little bit more about UFC 199 and then a little bit more UFC news. Hang in there, and we'll be right back with you.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Okay, we're back. And like I said, I have William with me today. And one of the first things we're going to talk about is Bellator 155 that happened this weekend. There was a lot of really upset people in regards to the results, which dealt with Carvalho versus Manhoff. William, did you get a chance to see the fight at all?
Well, you know, I saw some of the highlights on there. It didn't look like that great of a fight. I looked up some statistics afterwards, and there was only about 25 significant strikes landed in the fight completely. So,
oh, really? I didn't even realize it was that bad.
Yeah.
I went back and I kind of did the same thing. I was planning on watching the whole fight, but I actually went through and I just I kind of watched the fight in a kind of a fast-forward kind of way because there was a lot of kind of slower portions of it. But from what I saw, it did kind of look like I thought Manhoff was winning, but it was really a close fight.
Yeah, I would say so as well. From the highlights that I saw, I would say it's a horrible fight, and the judging was even worse.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with you on that one. You know, there was quite a few boos, and then when you tune in, you know, and you talk to, you know, hear from a lot of other people, everyone thought there should have been a new middleweight champion in Bellator, but in the end, the champ won. I didn't really have a problem with the champ winning just because I come from the old school approach where if you're the champ, you got to beat the champ to take the title. And I just didn't see Manhoff, from what I've seen, it didn't look like Manhoff did enough to actually take the title. Your take?
Yeah, well, you do have to dominate in order to be the champion, but for Melvin, I think it's okay for him because he's a big name and he has a chance to get back into the mix for the contention for the title. So I don't think it's going to hurt him in the long run. It's just it's a minor setup for him.
Yeah, I know we were talking before the show that, you know, you were talking about how you've been following Melvin for a long time and, you know, you really like him as a fighter.
Yeah, well, Melvin actually, back in the day, he fought Mark Hunt in Japan, and he actually knocked him out in 18 seconds. So I've been a fan since then.
No, you know what? And you told me about that, and I did not see that. As a matter of fact, that's part of my my weekend homework, is I really want to go back and I want to take a look at that fight there.
Another fight that you should check out is Melvin Manhoff versus Robbie Lawler. He was destroying Robbie Lawler's legs and just absolutely taking it to him, almost on the brink of knocking him out, until I'd let you do the research for that.
Well, just in case a lot of people aren't doing the research, how did it end up?
Well, he had Robbie hurt, he had him limping, and Robbie came with an overhand right or left and just took the lights out.
And it was canceled Christmas, huh?
Pretty much.
All right. So, you know, I just wanted to touch on a little bit about the Bellator 155 fight card. As a whole, I just didn't, you know, from I just kind of went through the card kind of because I recorded it and watched it later. So I kind of went through the entire lineup kind of fast. But I really wasn't overly that pleased with the card this week. It was just kind of a slow card for me, so I wasn't really into it. But one of the things that I do want to talk about is some of the events that are coming up this week. You know, because we have UFC Fight Night, which is coming up, which is, you know, Alameda versus, who is he fighting again?
Cody Garbrandt.
Okay. And then also before that, on Friday, ONE FC is going to be fighting. That's the Kingdom of Champions. So it's going to be a full weekend of fights. So I'm looking forward to just kicking back and watching some fights this holiday weekend. Let's touch on some of the fights. First off, what's your take on the main event?
Well, I'm actually extremely excited for Almeida versus Garbrandt. These are two of the hottest prospects in the bantamweight division, and it's going to be fireworks. That's what my take on it's going to be.
Do you have a person that you're taking as a favorite?
You know, the thing with Almeida is that he can get reckless at times, and his defense isn't on point, and he's definitely hittable. Cody Garbrandt has the speed to take him out if he gets a little bit reckless. Almeida has the skills to take out anybody in the division. I mean, even with Dominic Cruz and TJ Dillashaw at the top, he still has a chance to beat them. He has all the fundamentals to beat them, but he just gets reckless. So I see Cody Garbrandt taking advantage of that, and it's going to be a close fight, but I see him taking the decision.
So you got Cody winning a five-round decision then, huh?
If he doesn't knock him out, he's got the decision.
I kind of agree with you on that one a little bit. I got Cody winning the decision as well. It's one of those fights that could end up in a lot of fireworks. I'm not sure. We'll see how it goes. But, I definitely am leaning toward Cody a little bit. Now, there's a couple of cards on the undercard, a couple of fights on the undercard that I am truly intrigued by. And the one that I first want to talk about is the Jeremy Stephens fight. I'm kind of excited about seeing Jeremy Stephens back in the ring. Give me your take on what's your take on this fight.
You know, Henan Brow, he is coming off some devastating losses to TJ Dillashaw. So his solution for that is moving up in weight. I mean, he was a big bantamweight. I don't think that translates to featherweight that well. So we're going to see a huge size difference between Henan and Stephens. I mean, Henan is 5'6" and Jeremy's 5'9".
Okay.
And the thing about that is, I know Henan's probably going to have the speed advantage, but when you're talking about Stephens, you're going to definitely have some power behind that. And I don't foresee Henan having a good shot against that.
You know, with Henan Brow coming up, I'm not a big fan of a guy moving up in weight, because of the fact that he was kind of, I hate to say it this way, but kind of ran out of the division, the lower division, you know. But when guys move up, sometimes they bring a little bit more power with them. But he's actually going to go into this fight as a smaller man. And I think Jeremy Stephens is just a little too big and a little too powerful. I could see this being a really dangerous, dangerous fight for Brow, and I think he's going to end up making it a bad decision. I got Stephens winning by a KO. I wouldn't be shocked if it was a kind of an early KO as well, just because of the size difference. I got it as a early second round knockout. What are you taking?
You know, I have to agree with you. Like you said, Henan kind of did run out of the division, but that weight cut was brutal for him. Henan was struggling with the weight cut, and right before his second fight with TJ Dillashaw, he actually knocked himself out by weight cutting and just hit himself on the bathtub. So I don't...
Well, he kind of passed out from the weight cut. That's kind of what you were saying.
Yeah, and I don't I don't know how much that weight cut took a toll on him. He might look better in 45, but I definitely give Jeremy the power advantage, as well as just the fact that he's just a bigger man. I don't see Hennin really recovering from some of the shots that he's going to be able to land on him.
Now, see, this is one of the bad things about, you know, about the weigh-in and the whole process of how the UFC and how boxing does weigh-ins, because of the fact that, you know, guys really have to diet themselves down to make a weight. And then a lot of times when you weigh them the next day, they're so much heavier. It's because they've dieted down to the point where, you know, the day before the fight, they're not drinking any water. They're desperately, when after the weigh-in, they're desperately rehydrating. Sometimes it can be a dangerous situation for a fighter.
Yeah, definitely. And they've actually tried to put in a new guideline behind that. So fighters actually have to weigh in at a certain percentage of their fighting weight before the fight, or else they're going to be monitored that week. So that's some of the guidelines that they put in place right now. We'll see how effective they are, but it's basically just a slap on a wrist if you're not.
Yeah, there's no real hardcore enforcement of it, you know.
Yeah, and that's why I really respect what they're doing in ONE FC. Their weight-cutting protocol over there is actually fantastic for the sport, and I think it's going to really spread out across the different fighting organizations out there.
Okay, and then the last fight that I just, and thank you for that part, the next fight I wanted to talk about, it deals with Jessica I and Sarah McMahon, which goes into that women's bantamweight division, where you have two fighters that are really trying to get into the title picture. And I'll tell you this, Jessica I, who is one of my favorite fighters in the division, but she's been going through some really tough times. This is in her last four fights. She's lost three of her last four fights, and all of them have been by decision. So, you know, her losses have been by decision, but it's really taken her out of the title picture as a whole. And then you also you have a situation where, you know, she's going up against Sarah McMahon. This is kind of a must-win situation for Jessica I kind of feel. What about you?
I definitely agree. I think it's a horrible matchup for Jessica I, because if you look at her past two losses against Pena as well as Tate, the main obstacles that she actually encountered were the fact that they were wrestlers and they were taking her down, and she really needs to work on her takedown defense in order to really compete with the top of the division. And I don't think that she could have done that in the time that she had since her last fight. So I definitely have Sarah McMahon coming out top, probably by decision.
I definitely have Sarah McMahon winning this fight. You know, when you look at Sarah McMahon as well, you know, this is one of those situations where, you know, Sarah's hasn't been on the best of winning streaks as well. I believe she's lost three of her last four as well. So this is kind of one of those fights where it's like it's time to kind of stop the bleeding for both of these guys.
It might be loser leaves town.
I hated to say that, but I was actually thinking, you know, I mean, I don't think so much for Sarah McMahon. Sarah McMahon still has a lot of, you know, there's a lot of weight that still goes with the Sarah McMahon name. I think Jessica I could definitely be in trouble if she cannot pull off, you know, an impressive win. You know, when you look around and you say, you look at who, you know, Sarah McMahon's lost to at her three of her last fights. Yes, she lost to Ronda Rousey. There's nothing wrong with losing to Ronda Rousey, guys. You know, she lost to Miesha Tate, only the champion. And then, you know, Amanda Nunes. I mean, so she's, when you look at Sarah McMahon and you say, I understand her three losses, where Jessica I, you know, the resume's not as, you know, not as impressive. And so I really think that you have a situation where she really, you know, Jessica I has to, like, really pull things out. And for that matter, when we're talking about Jessica I, who's her three losses to Alexi Davis. Alexi Davis is a good fighter. Miesha Tate, and then Juliana Pena. So, I mean, both of them have had great fights. But seriously, neither one of these guys can afford three losses in a row. I think it would put their UFC career in danger. What about you?
Definitely, and I agree. From a marketability standpoint, I definitely think that UFC is going to keep Sarah McMahon because that Olympic silver medal just adds so much credibility to her her resume. So,
yeah, I would agree with you on that one. So, but as a whole, your results, you had Sarah McMahon winning, right?
Yeah,
same here. I got Sarah McMahon winning. I'm going to say it's going to go to distance. It's going to be a decision. I think it'll be a hard-fought fight, but in the end, I got Sarah McMahon winning and Jessica going into, losing four out of the last, five.
We may see her in Invicta.
You know, there's some truth to that. I would not be shocked. I'd be sad to see her there, but I think there's a possibility. But when you look at things and you say, if that did happen, you look at
Angela Hill.
Angela Hill. That's exactly what I was going to get to. Maybe a step back and get you on a winning streak, get your head right, and you can kind of recoup your career. I think Jessica would be a big star in Invicta. I'm not trying to push her over there, but I'm just saying if it happens, it may not be a bad thing.
The thing that I respect the most about Jessica is she always comes to fight. I mean, no matter what, till the bell rings, she's in there.
Oh, I love Jessica. I think Jessica's a hard, tough woman. And, it's just, the division is so stacked with such powerful, tough women that I don't think, someone has to kind of fall by the wayside sometimes. And I think these two ladies have been kind of victim of this tough division. Now, with that being said, we're going to take a short little break. When we come back, we're going to touch on all the going-ons for UFC 199, which deals with the whole situation with Chris Weidman having to step out. Thank you, and we'll be right back.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's gsmcpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Okay, we're back. And the next thing we're going to talk about is UFC 199. Which, originally was supposed to be Rockhold versus Weidman, Chris Weidman. But through situation, Chris Weidman is out. And he's out with an injury to his neck. He has a herniated disc, is that correct?
That is correct. And actually, Kurt Angle reached out to him to talk to him about that.
You know what? I saw that, but, I'm a wrestling fan, and so I know who Kurt Angle is, and God, I hope the Chris Weidman's neck doesn't end up like Kurt Angle, because Kurt Angle cannot turn his neck at all. It is just it's just fixed in place. But everything I hear about Chris Weidman's injury, it's a pretty serious situation. This could be one of those situations where Chris may never be the same fighter ever again. Neck injuries are not to be played with, and especially neck surgeries.
And when you talk about the fact that he's going to be taking blows to the head and the neck is what stabilizes the head, you're talking about something that's you don't know what's going to happen when he comes back.
I agree with you. And one of my biggest concerns I have for Chris in this situation, and it's a tragic story of him being injured, because I do worry, will he ever come back and be the same?
Well, when you talk about Cain Velasquez, someone that's succumbed to so many injuries in his career, he's not the same from when he burst out on the scene towards 2009 and 2010. His athleticism isn't there. There's just differences in his game now.
Yes, I know. And, you know, and like I said, when I was talking about Chris, you know, Chris at one point in time, you know, he burst on the scene and he was an unstoppable force. I still have always wanted to see a third fight between him and Anderson because I've always felt like the fights with Anderson never were, I was never satisfied by them. You know, the first fight with Anderson, it was a situation where Anderson was playing around and he just got caught. The second fight, it was just a crazy freak accident, which ended up Anderson breaking his leg. So I've never really seen a Chris Weidman, Anderson Silva real fight.
Well, when you talk about that, I don't know if we'll ever see Anderson Silva the same. I mean, he was riding the wave of invincibility before he faced Chris Weidman, and he took his position for granted, and he was basically clowning the entire fight, and he paid for it. And in a return fight, he definitely wasn't the same. Even when you saw him lead up and walk towards the cage, he took a while in prayer. He just wasn't the same.
You know, and with mentioning Silva, it rolls right into Chris Weidman's replacement, which is Michael Bisping. And what do you think about the fact that Bisping is a replacement?
Well, I know that the UFC was trying to get Jacare Souza to be the replacement for Weidman. However, Jacare had a MRI, and it found out that his knee was injured, so he wasn't able to take the fight. All the other contenders were all wrapped up in fights of their own, so they chose Michael Bisping, who's coming off a win of Anderson. So
now, and that's what I was saying about talking about Anderson. I got a big problem with this decision. I have a huge problem with this decision, and there is a two-part problem. The first part is by picking Bisping is this. When I watched the Anderson Silva Bisping fight, this is what I saw. I saw Anderson winning the fight, and I think winning the fight with ease, beating up Bisping, really beating him up, and in the end, knocking him out. I'm not exaggerating, knocking him out. And I truly thought the fight was over. Anderson's on the cage. He's celebrating. He's thinking the fight is over. And the referee is keeping, and the, you know, the bell sounds. So Bisping's been saved by the bell. And then, you know, they bring everything back in. They continue to fight on. Bisping wins. He's in his own hometown. And I thought he got some serious, and I mean serious, home cooking. Because when the scores came in, I was as shocked as Anderson was that he lost that fight. I thought he won it with ease. He clearly knocked him out. I'm not saying knocked him down. I said knocked him out. I thought he knocked him out, and I thought he won the fight. What was your take on that fight?
I thought it was a great fight in the sense that Michael Bisping kept on going forward, and that played a role in the judges' eyes. I know it was hometown advantage there as well, but I definitely. I just think that Anderson has, in the past and to this day, he's doing a little bit too much coasting, a little bit too much playing, and that's going to play a role in the judges' eyes, and people are going to be turned off by that. I mean, people were booing in that fight based on his actions, and you know, that does play a factor in the judge's eyes.
Now, I agree with what you're getting at here. With Anderson, he, you know, part of being Anderson is the playing around. But I think sometimes when you're getting to the point where you're getting a little older, you're getting a little slower, I think he needs to change his game up to, you know, press a little bit more, take the playing and throw it away, and get more serious about his fights, because I still think Anderson can contend for the title. He just has to be more focused and stay on his, and you know, if he presses that fight with Bisping, Bisping's not fighting for the championship right now. Bisping's out of the picture. But with that being said, Bisping is contending for the title for the first time. Everyone's been wanting to see Bisping get a shot at the title his whole career. And if it wasn't for the fact that this injury happens and Jacare's injury happens and things like that, Bisping may never get a title shot in his career because, you're looking around and you say, let's say they do the Jacques Ray fight, and then, you know, and then Wyman comes back, and, you know, then you maybe have a third match with Wyman. There's a situation where Bisping could never, ever get a title shot in his entire career. So I felt like this was a lifetime achievement award by giving him a title shot.
And when you look back at Bisping's career, let's look at who he's faced. I don't think there's anybody in the history of mixed martial arts that's faced as many people that were on some type of PED than Michael Bisping has faced. I mean, he faced Chael Sonnen, Wanderlei Silva.
Is it like the PED Hall of Fame? Is you're required in order to get into the PED Hall of Fame, you have to fight Bisping then? Is that what you're getting at?
I mean, he's been on the cusp of contention for the fight, for the title, and he's faced people like Dan Henderson, who were benefiting from TRT. I mean, he was on a title eliminator fight with Chael Sonnen, and he lost this close decision to him, which I still think that he won to this day.
Okay.
And when you look at it, he should have had a title fight in the past. Just circumstances got in the way, and he's never had the chance. So I think the UFC is kind of giving him a service right here and giving him basically like a lifetime achievement title award for this.
So you kind of agree with me on the lifetime achievement award then?
Definitely. And I want to see how Bisping – I wish I can go back in the past and see how Bisping's career panned out without all these people that were on some type of substance.